You're listening to the True Faith Podcast. This is your host, Adam Widdrington. I'm joined in the True Faith studio by regulars Ben Wade.
Hello, Adam.
And Alex Hurst.
Hello, listeners.
Fresh from Hamburg, Germany, Alex.
Yeah, Hamburg, Germany, not as good as St. James's Park was last night. Now, what about 6:30, 7 o'clock when that game finished? Full house, allegedly, at St. James's Park. And absolutely brilliant win. It's like I'll never go to a home game again if it can be that good.
If you could just stay away, that would be pretty good. Cheers, mate.
Go back to Hamburg.
But what, you know, in a game where it was, you know, Bruce versus Solskjaer, two managers hugely under pressure, it was Steve Bruce of all people who came out victorious. Just how huge a turning point could this be, Ben, in our season? How big is this result for Steve Bruce and Newcastle United?
It could be massive, I think. He's finally stumbled across a team that worked really well, was more coherent than any of the teams that he's put together. And I think there's more potential in this 11 that he put out last night that you can see actually getting some success. I think the issues we've had in a lot of the games before now is they've been very lackluster. There's not been any sort of cohesion in terms of the way the teams have played. And they've just... It's been sort of bit parts, a few players looking okay, but it's not really come together at any stage. And yet, stick two brothers in the centre of the park and it's solved all our issues, basically, by the looks of it. I think you have to give a lot of credit to those two. Obviously, all the plaudits from the media has been about them too. And obviously, Matty coming in for his first start. Massive occasion. I mean, Man U at home, first game. I mean, I know it's not the Man U we know, but it's still
Man United.
Still the pressure of it, and obviously you hear him talking after the game stuff. He was still absolutely buzzing, and it's quite refreshing to have that sort of naivety, I guess, in terms of a sort of a local like boy who looks completely out of place in terms of sort of the egos and things that you normally expect from footballers. He just looks like a down to earth lad, and I think that temperament for him probably helped him bucket loads in terms of he just played with loads of energy, and that's what you sort of get from him. It's a huge result for Bruce, just because it's obviously it's a win, it gets fans back on side, it's a big scalp. And as I say, I think he'll have seen enough last night to think we've got some bits here where we can hurt teams now. Maximan looked brilliant. I thought Almiron actually probably had one of his poorer games, but we know what he can do. And we've now got a centre midfield partnership that looks to be able to transition to both ends of the pitch. So I think that's probably the biggest thing he'll take out of that, is that he's found a midfield pairing that can get winter games.
And it is a scalp, and it's probably a scalp that Steve Bruce had, you know, sort of penciled in as one that if he was to get one, that would be the big one from Alex. Just Steve made a lot of big calls in that starting lineup. Just, you know, how did you feel about them before the game, and how did you feel about them after the game?
He made a lot of very impressive calls, and Ben, I'm sure you didn't mean it like this when you say he stumbled onto the correct lineup. But that was kind of almost an inspired team selection, and we have criticised Steve Bruce, and I've criticised Steve Bruce a lot this season, and I stand by all of that criticism. But you also have to give credit where it's due, and the selection of Kieran Clarke. There were very few Newcastle fans, if any, who would have thought, fight for this game, what we need to do is change Paul Dummett for Kieran Clarke. Kieran Clarke, far more comfortable in possession. You know, the last home game in particular against Brighton, when the back three of Dummett, Lascelles and Cher just couldn't hang on to the ball. You know, so much pressure placed on Cher's, that one ball-carrying centre-back. Bringing in Clarke for this game was a brilliant, brilliant call. And is Kieran Clarke the best player Newcastle's ever seen? No, but by God, he did a job yesterday. The selection of Longstaff, I'll not lie.
Just on Clarke, it's almost as if he's been like trained what to do for 2 or 3 years by like a super coach or something.
Yeah, he has, but like that, you know, I personally would have played Fernandes, and you know, maybe Fernandes would have had a good game. But when you make big calls, like dropping Paul Dummett, popular player in the team, done fine this season, that's a big call to make. And if it goes badly, if Kieran Clarke knocks one of his own net or gets sent off, everyone jumps on you. And you know, Adam, you asked me about what I thought before the game. I thought the selection of Longstaff pre-game seemed desperate to throw a 19-year-old in for his debut when he hasn't played a single minute of Premier League football. It's not like you've been bringing him through And I saw the quote. I was watching it on my phone in a shopping centre in Hamburg alone.
That's so sad.
I saw his quote pre-game about, we brought him in because we need legs in midfield. I just thought, what a load of bollocks. That's just a ridiculous term. But he was absolutely spot on. We had a player,
legs.
We had a player in midfield who was able to press, able to nick possession, and then also get up in support with the attack and counter-attacking players. And you saw he did that for the goal, and he covered more ground than anyone. And Steve Bruce on this occasion was proved like emphatically correct. So, you know, there will be times probably where we criticise him again, because this result hasn't fixed everything. We've still only scored 5 goals in 4 games, but we can park that for a couple of weeks now, and we can look ahead to Chelsea, and we can have the international break. And I talked about this in the last international break. Rarely as Newcastle fans, these October, September international breaks, rarely have there been anything other than just kind of tiresome and disastrous and going into them with bad results. You know, fair play to Steve Bruce, fair play to the players. That's a massive win, and they deserve all the credit in the world.
Absolutely. I thought he got the setup of it bang on. I was having a bit of a Twitter chat with Chris Woff, who's on the podcast a few weeks ago, just before the game, and he was talking about the inside forwards that we had in terms of Almiron and Saint-Maximin, and the fact that the wing backs, and how, you know, Bruce was going to impose this counter-attacking football, which he would absolutely has to do against, you know, a team, regardless of how good or poor this Man United team is. They're extremely comfortable in possession, far more than we will ever be. So at least we know that. We know our limitations there. And if we are set up to do for the counter-attack, then that's something that we know we are capable of. It's within our, it's feasible. It's, you know, it's a realistic approach to take. And with the addition of Yedlin as well, and I thought that was such a key select. You know, you've got, you know, Kraft, Mankio, probably a more, I mean, you'd like to say, more kind of conservative kind of.
Defensively sound.
Yeah, they're it's a bit less of a risk, whereas Yedlin, you know what you get with Yedlin, probably almost exactly the same as you get with Willems on the other side. You know, you're not necessarily going to get defensive solidity with those players, but what they do provide is the pace that they have, the raw athleticism that they both have, can get up the pitch to support an otherwise isolated attacking front three that we've seen for weeks has just been struggling. We counter-attacked essentially once properly against Liverpool, and we managed to score. We did it once against Spurs, and we managed to score. You know, it's not, that doesn't necessarily mean it's working, but we saw so much yesterday that suddenly there was a game plan there, there was balance there, and we could see what they wanted to do. Now, it was funny in the opening few minutes, we were really, I don't know, you're going to laugh at this phrase, we were really on the front foot. And we just came out of the traps, and it was almost like we went in that game probably not expecting to have a lot of possession, and we, you know, in the grand scheme of things in terms of the game, we didn't. But that opening few minutes, we were peppering them. We were in a corner in the first minute, you know, and that was sort of, it really set the tone. It really got the crowd going, and I think that really helped. And you know, what you're saying about Matty Longstaff there in terms of, like, you know, he's got legs, but this is exactly what we've been missing for games. You know, the fact that we just don't get up in people's faces, the fact that we don't show any energy or willing or enthusiasm to sort of grab a game by the, you know, Saint-Maximin's the kind of player, when he came on as a sub, he grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck against Brighton, and he tried to make things happen out of absolutely nothing, because he knew it was just flat otherwise. And Matty Longstaff did that in a similar way, in a more kind of conservative defensive kind of way, but he did not give any Manchester United midfielder any time on the ball to decide what they were going to do. He was up in their face, and what he did, I felt, drove the rest of the team to do the same. He was the one that kept that energy high, and the energy went out into the stands as well.
Can I just, to echo a number of points you've made, that the goal was absolutely brilliant, not just for the finish, which I'm sure we'll come on to and we'll talk about. I really like the way that Steve Bruce calls them the brothers, just like, not the Longstaff brothers, just the brothers. But the younger of the brothers, the finish was brilliant. But the actual goal itself, you talk about fullbacks, you talk about the impact that they have in terms of attacking and Liverpool and stuff. the fact that Jethro Williams is where he is hilarious. Like, like, what are you doing? Like, but it's brilliant. It's the same as the goal at Liverpool. And for, can I just give a... We're going to talk about Almiron a little bit more later, I think. But first of all, Almiron picks the ball up from a Man United corner, and I'm thinking, get it up, get it away. He beats Fred. He beats him. He drops a shoulder. He gets on the byline. And so he's not just looking to boot it. He's not just looking to get clear or get into touch. And it's a brilliant ball. And you know, when you see good teams play, and whenever their clearances turn into attacks because they're able to find the player and their positioning's correct, the ball is brilliant to Saint-Maximin. He turns, he doesn't look backwards. He turns and he runs and he drives. And Jethro has been played hilariously onside by Rojo, I think, as Adam reminded me before. And then, you know, there were quite a few counter-attacks before that in the second half where it fizzled out because we kept going forwards. But actually, they waited. There was nothing on in the box, really. And
just had a bit of composure.
He passed it back to Saint-Maximin, who then, you know, we saw earlier in the season some snapshots from the edge of the box that went miles wide. But no, he waits. There's the legs arriving that Steve Bruce, to be fair to him, talked about. And it went in. And that was not just the finish, like I said, that was a quality counter-attacking goal of the highest order. And if when we can score goals from opposition corners, we're in business.
I agree, and I don't think we've scored a better counter-attacking goal since we beat Southampton 3-0, and Kennedy tapped it in from that one. That was from a Southampton corner. Lamina swiped it. Gale was involved. Kennedy was involved, and finished it off. And that was superb. But we haven't seen it that. Honestly, you're right. That Almiron ball to Saint-Maximin wasn't on. It simply wasn't on. It wasn't an option. You think he was just like, oh, we'll just get it up the pitch, but it wasn't. It was measured. And the fact that it was Saint-Maximin, by the time he passed that out wide to Willems, he was just great to find that space and great to get up. The desire of Willems to get up there and support was phenomenal. And we don't score that goal without him. And at the time that Saint-Maximin releases Willems, he's got four Manchester United players around him.
And he, by the way, this hasn't really been picked up. He hilariously puts one of them on the floor. Like, one of the Man United players overcommits so much. Like, mate, he's got no left foot, mate. Like, you don't need to commit. He's going to shoot with his left foot. It's always going to cut. Like, I'm not a defender of football, but I know that in that situation, Jethro Williams is going to cut back onto his right foot. Watch it again, listeners.
But let's indulge in the goal a bit more. Jethro Williams, we saw a bit of his footwork trickery. I saw it from the stands in Anfield when he fired that rocket past Adrian, and he showed that he's capable of doing it again. He beats two men with his footwork, really tight technique. Like, that's really impressive stuff. And he sort of led on his right foot as well, which that's his unnatural foot. Just, it was the composure to stop at that point after you've beaten two men who were still really close to you inside the box, look up, and just a perfectly weighted ball that Matty Longstaff can catch just on the slight outside of his foot with a bit of backspin on it. It just managed to drive it past. Well, it was just low and hard.
Just one point before we get Ben's thoughts on it. Fair play to Saint-Maximin, who did in Islam Slimani against Huddersfield a couple of years ago, so we knew he was offside. In fact, it's hilarious. Like, if you watch the goal again, so two things, listener. One, you need to see who Jethro Williams puts on his arse and let one know. And two, Saint-Maximin, when he doesn't get played in by Williams, just runs into the goal for some reason.
No, he gets a push.
Does he get a push?
No, so I was watching Match of the Day 2 last night, and I missed it, and then I purposely rewound it back because I wanted to see how he ended up in that net. But it was, but he went to go for, like, he thought that Williams might have sort of put it across the face of goal, but then the defender gave him a cheeky nudge, which means he went flying into the net. But like, whether he... I mean,
he does stay and watch it to make sure, because if he re-enters the field of play, they're likely being called offside.
Yeah.
Some tit at VAR headquarters would be all over that.
How can we disallow this?
So fair play to him as well. Obviously, that was a crucial moment.
I mean, you've got to give a lot of credit for the strike as well. I mean, obviously, given the conditions, obviously, it was a sleek pitch, obviously been raining all day. He could have quite easily sort of panicked and just gone for power and put it anywhere, straight down the keeper's throat or whatever, but he's hit across it and kept it low, and it's in the corner. Like, it's an unbelievable strike.
How about them celebrations?
Just on the run as well. I know, unbelievable.
I just say, three cleanest strikes at St James's Park this season have all been by a 19-year-old lad who's played about 5 minutes of first team football. His goal against St Etienne was an absolute tremendous screamer. That shot in the first half, the technique in it is incredible.
I don't
incredible.
Know how he gets so much dip on it for.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Only 20-odd yards out.
Like you say, the goal, that's, you know, a lot of some of the efforts we've seen from his his colleagues in other games, you know, they could learn a lot. You know, they should have a Matty Longstaff masterclass.
Shooting technique.
Running and shooting, just the dream.
But I mean, but this is it, because, you know, it wasn't that strike wasn't a fluke. As we saw in the first half, as we saw against Sam at the end, he's just very, very good at long shots. Yeah. And what a weapon to have in the side of someone who's, you know, driving from deep. Like if he is going to be like, you know, this kind of, could be like a box-to-box, and he's just arriving late, to be able to just, like, you know, if he gets it just out of his feet, you've got a chance of, like, at least getting a shot on target or worrying a goalkeeper, you know. When was the last time we had, like, midfielders who could consistently do that? I'm not saying, you know, one strike makes him that player, but it certainly gives him the potential.
That's it. It's a great start, and I think if he can grow from this, I mean, if that's the floor level, if he can go on and develop his game more, and I mean, let's be honest, there was a few passes there where he probably chose the wrong option. There was a couple of times where I think he passed too early when he could have had the time to have a look and there were better options. So that there's a lot more improvement, but as a first performance goes, it's a hell of a marker to put down.
You can't drop him now. Yeah. You simply can't drop him for the next game. And that is what we saw with his brother. When his brother came in, and again, I don't know whether this is part of the running order, but I thought, crucially, and as important as Matty's debut was, for Sean Longstaff to be approaching something like his best, the best that we saw last season, was really important. I know you're going to talk about centre midfielders in a bit, but I thought his performance shouldn't be over. Well, it will be overshadowed because his little brother was fucking class and beat Man United. But I thought his performance was the kind of measured, calm, composed, passing with both feet again, first time passes. You're correct in what you say. In fact, the start of the game reminded me of when we beat them a couple of years ago, 1-0, and Richie scored. Like, within 30 seconds there, Modiyame clatters Paul Pogba. Within 30 seconds here, Sean Longstaff goes and, like, comfortably dispossesses McTominay and sets up a counter-attack, and it's like that set the tone. And that, you know, I think it was Match of the Day 2 picked up on Fred, £50 million Fred, and his inability on the ball.
They weren't the only ones,
and how rushed he looked. And that's, they didn't go into that anymore. That's because every time Fred got the ball, he's thinking, I've got a Longstaff up my arse. Like that's a bad phrase, but I've got a Longstaff behind us. Pressure. So even when they weren't, he was panicking, thinking.
I thought he was like hobbling off the pitch, actually. Yeah, and that explains a lot.
No, come on. This is a family show, apart from all the swearing. But yeah, I just thought we got into their heads again. And even though they had 69% possession, it was mostly pointless.
And I think the way that we started the game really, really helped that, because that first dribble by Saint-Maximin, where he just drove, and you just think, you're playing a team who haven't won away for about 10 matches or something like that. An awful run. A team really just, you know, low on their confidence, low on their luck. And you've got somebody like so positive, like Saint-Maximin, just driving at them. Suddenly, like, they, from the first minute, they were like, shit, they're up for this, you know. And the impact, I mean, it's funny. I'm going to go back to what you mentioned earlier, Ben, about this kind of stumbling upon this, but it kind of was. I mean, this is kind of how the Hayden Longstaff thing happened. It was out of necessity that those two players were put together against a Manchester City side, and, you know, the rest is kind of history with that, because they both made those players. They came back. You know, Hayden kind of came back from the dead, really, in terms of his Newcastle career. But
to be fair, Longstaff and Bruce as well, this time, Keane Shelvey were available. So whilst you are right, that was out of necessity. I just have to give so much credit to Steve Bruce. And
you are right. You're right.
It doesn't change my overall opinion of him yet. But this is the right way. This is the right way to go. And that, you know, I questioned him on this podcast and have done on our extra Patreon shows, like, was he kind of mentally up for it? And I mean, did he believe that he could affect this football team in a positive way? And he's emphatically answered that question with probably the best selection of the Premier League season so far from any team.
I mean, I think the Matty Longstaff has come in, and it's a good point to make, the one with Hayden, because Hayden, when he came into the team, and when him and Longstaff have been at the best, they're pressing at both sides, at both ends of the pitch. They press high, and because they're both athletic enough, Bruce coins it, the legs, they're fit enough and athletic enough to play in both boxes, basically. And that's what Longstaff was, that's what Matty was able to do. I think we wouldn't have had that had he gone with Keogh Shelvey. And it's fair play, as you say, it's fair play to Bruce. I mean, the reason I say he stumbled is because he hasn't played Longstaff before now. And
maybe
the team's been a bit chop and changing.
Maybe that stumbling is more about, well, I've tried Key, I didn't really like what he gave me. I've tried Shelvey, I didn't want to play him in that kind of game. So maybe the stumbling is just trying to find, and that's what football management's about. You know, you're trying to chop and change, you tweak, and until you find that kind of, that something clicks and a winning combination, that's where you lay foundations for how you might then push on. And this is what I was saying on the Full Time Whistle show on our YouTube channel, is that this can't be another false dawn. We can't let just that we never built on that Spurs result. And we should have done it. It was such an opportunity to, and we didn't. It seems that we need to get an absolute hammer in the week before. It's like Norwich and Leicester have driven these amazing results on, but what we need to do is we need to be able to achieve these without getting a hump in the week before. We need something more solid, more consistent that we can go on with. But you, Alex, you're right in what you're saying. Bruce got it right and deserves the credit. And it was just a tremendous performance. But I think in terms of midfielders, Ben Isaac Hayden got a red card, suspended. Longstaff has come in, taken his chance. Where does this leave somebody like Isaac Hayden and the rest of the central midfielders now?
I mean, he's still got a part to play as a squad. I mean, as good as he's played, I'm not sure you're going to be able to rely on a 19-year-old all season. So, I mean, to be fair, some of the tackles he was flying in the second half were down a yellow card. I thought he might have ended off the pitch at some point, to be honest. But I think it was just that enthusiasm. I think Hayden's still got a role to play, and hopefully, having seen that performance, that'll energise him to say, right, I've got to fight on. Because I think as well, there's an element of he probably felt like he was undroppable in terms of that, just for whatever reason, Bruce does not fancy Key, no matter what. And he's obviously, he was really into Shelvey, but that doesn't appear to have worked and doesn't really work. So, it's another option, it's another player to come off the bench if we need fresher legs, if we do have a game. I mean, there were periods in that game where we did look tired and we lost a bit of energy. But it's a nice problem to have, isn't it? I think to have another option there.
I think Adam, your point about the fullbacks is excellent, and I think that really helps the midfield too. Yesterday is probably more of a traditional 5-4-1, you know, line of five, line of four, with your centre forward out of possession. One of the issues I've seen from centre midfield this season, and particularly Hayden, the likes of Kraft and Mankio and Richie, even against Arsenal, are so deep, and it becomes a flat back five that when you've got the three attacking players ahead of you, all of a sudden those two players don't just have to concentrate on pressing their opponents in midfield, whether that's two or three men. They're out on the right, the right, the left. They're ending up in the right back position, in the right forward position, and there's times Hayden's been kind of caught on the right of the pitch, and then there's this massive gap. Brighton in particular, you saw Hayden almost getting forwards, trying to get something going, turning around, and Jonjo Shelby's 30 yards back, whereas yesterday, we had those four midfield with the two wingers, who, by the way, worked exceptionally hard. People talk about Almiron dropping him, St. Maximin, is he fit, is he that? Well, those two players yesterday gave everything for the shirt and for Steve Bruce, as did all the players. And the fact that when we were in possession, those two players were able to push up towards Joe Linton, that's the theory anyway. You had your fullbacks pushing up, and all of a sudden, the two Longstaffs weren't isolated, they weren't alone in midfield, and that allows them to go and press opposition.
There was always that outlet, and that's the key thing. And obviously, you were talking about Yedlin earlier about sort of he's not as defensively solid as some of the other ones, but what you know he's got is a lot of pace. And obviously, the way Manu were playing with Daniel James and Ashley Young out there, he had the pace to sort of neutralise that potential threat there, but equally turn it on the head. And there was a number of attacks that we had where Yedlin was getting forward and supporting the play. And as you say, I think one of the issues we've had this season is when Hayden and Longstaff have won the ball back, there's literally nothing on other than going back to your three centre-backs who, when one of them is Jamal Lascelles and the other is Paul Dummett, you know the ball's just going back to the opposition. Whereas now, you've got those outlets where you know Williams is bombing on, and obviously for the goal he did that, and there were other occasions where he was getting up and supporting in the attacks, and Yedlin equally on the other side as well. So I think just that, again, it's that word, the energy and the enthusiasm of those two switches just really complemented the side again. And as you say, I mean, we started on fire, and I think you've got to give Bruce a bit of credit there for the way obviously that he prepared the players, and we came out and we sort of set our stall out a little bit. It wasn't a sustained period of positive sort of pressure or anything, but we showed Man U we're here for a fight and almost put it back on them, what are you going to do? And they had nothing, and we won the game really in terms of sort of neutralising. I think potentially they could have come in and seen we were in low confidence, they were in low confidence. It was going to be who's going to have the early sort of dominance of the match and build confidence in it, and it was us. And you just saw from the first minute, their midfield weren't up for that game, and it just, there were other facets that obviously came about, but it was just a really energetic performance that was lacking at Leicester and has been lacking in other games, and we've got to grow on this.
I wouldn't say it's energy, though there was an abundance of energy. it was everyone knew what they were doing, everyone knew their role, and that's apart from Spurs, it's the first time we've seen it this season, that's the second time we've seen it this season. And I put a tweet out before the game saying we're kind of in a position now with Bruce where it'll be a victory today if we just get that, if we just get a well-drilled team who all know their positions, not players running over to the sideline saying this isn't working, not fans like, you know, perplexed in the stand about what's going on. And we did get that yesterday, and that it shouldn't be, but it is. That's a major step forward in a home game. And I don't care who you play at home at the minute. If we're going to stay in the Premier League this season, we're probably going to have to win 7, 8, 9 home games because we're so bad away traditionally. Maybe Bruce will sort that, but we are, like, even under Rafa, like a genuinely terrible side away from home. So we're going to have to win those home games. And for him to get it right in this game ahead of the international break, when a lot of his players will be with us for the next 2 weeks to continue working on that game plan, is so important for his long-term future, I think, because if he'd got it wrong yesterday, we would be sat here now saying he has to go, and it wouldn't just be us, it would be a lot of other fans. And this is the idea of Connext, and it's, you know, there was journalists after the game, not ones based in the northeast, saying, you know, kind of Steve Bruce, there you go type thing. And it's like, well, we've got 8 points from 8 games. We've played 4 of the top 6, Arsenal, Liverpool, Man United, Spurs. I know a couple of those teams are going through a tough time, but, you know, so what? And by the time we've played 9 games, we'll have played 5 of the top 6. And then we've got Wolves, who are a good side. So we are going through a really difficult spell that yesterday's result, if it hadn't been achieved against such a poor side, but a side with a lot of quality players, we've kept a clean sheet. Martin Dubravka's not made a save. I said last week we were the easiest team in the league to play against, but weren't yesterday. Yeah. Were very difficult to break down, very difficult to play against. So there are so many positives to take out of this. And it's refreshing to see that us and everyone listening as a Newcastle fan can have a nice 2 weeks now. We can watch the highlights. We can click on the Sky Sports app. Other apps are available. We can do all these things. We can listen to the podcast. We can sign up to True Faith on Patreon again for £7 a month-ish for extra shows. And it's just nice, and you want to give Steve Bruce lots of credit for that, but the job is far from done.
Absolutely, and you know, let's look at this sort of disciplined shape that we displayed, and you could see it in the first half, and it was, you could tell that we were making it very, very difficult. And I noticed, you know, like you said, players like Almiron just being in the right place to force them to play it back and start again and maybe get it switched over to the other side to see if they could sort of penetrate that side. But no, we had enough pace and enough discipline and just determination from the players to actually want to protect, you know, the defence. And when it came down to the defence, when it came to sort of somebody, you know, Marcus Rashford, an incredibly talented young player, has a huge future ahead of him. He's kind of going through a bit of a a crisis in terms of, you know, is he a winger? Is he a striker? I don't think that he's necessarily being helped by his teammates, but he was anonymous yesterday, and that was largely in part to the performance of Fabian Scher. I'll come to you, Alex, because I know you're a big advocate of Scher, and particularly his performance yesterday. He really, really impressed me yesterday. I think he saved at least a couple of almost certain tap-ins within his around the 6-yard box, and he was just an absolute rock in that defence. And from a player, when he first arrived, who needed to be moulded a bit and needed to be sort of reined in a little bit by Rafa Benitez, he's really shown his class to be one of the best of the rest of the defenders outside the top six in the Premier League.
He's almost as valuable as a striker in certain situations. You say, look at the miracle goal line clearances that we're seeing more and more regularly. You know, that one yesterday where Rashford taps it in and he's managed to, you know, it's like it was twice yesterday actually when he prevented certain goals. The first half when he headed the ball just over, which is a brave, ballsy thing to do with the chance of heading into your own net. But if he doesn't head that ball, there's two players at the back post to head that in. 1-0 Man United before half time. Funnily enough, from that corner, he lost Maguire, who should have scored. But we're just going to ignore that for now because shit happens. He was clearly still probably knackered from it. And then in the second half, that one from Rashford, like you're correctly saying, and these are kind of as big as goals, because without Fabian Scher this season, I can't say this about any of our other defenders. You kind of think of Lascelles at Swansea a couple of years ago, another miracle clearance off the line, and we'll win 1-0, massive away win. That, you know, that Lascelles' impact and influence that season was integral in keeping us up, and Fabian Scher is now that player, and he will get better once Florian Lejeune comes into the team, because he will have more freedom. He will have not as much pressure on him. We saw against Brighton.
Might get his shooting bits back on.
Yeah. We saw against Brighton, Scher trying to force the issue a lot, because it's basically, we know when he had Hayden and Chalvey 40 yards apart from each other and two fullbacks sat on his toes, he was basically trying to miracle balls and stuff like that, which whilst he's very comfortable on the ball and an attacking threat, like you rightly say, if we're going to be successful as a team, we don't need Fabian Scher to be the main creator and the main goal scorer. But even when he's not doing that, he's literally saving goals at the other end, and he wins every header, and he's a bit of a shithouse. You know, you want him in your team. He puts his foot in, and he's always kind of niggling away at players. And, you know, because I was watching it on TV, you guys, you know, if you're at the match, you don't see these things. And every single time there's a free kick, one way or the other, involving Fabian Scher, there's niggle with the like whether he wins a free kick or the player, there's an argument afterwards, and it's all instigated by Fabian Scher. And he's just like, you got him, you got Matty Longstaff was the same, just always on, like always just
the moment when he put Fred down on his backside was me and Si were absolutely loving that. It was hilarious. Like, it was Fred, a brilliant moment.
This is what we need though. When we need,
and McTominay, like, comes in and he's like, yeah, what do you want?
Well, this is some? It. You know, you talk about sharing Matty Longstaff being like little like Geordie shit houses for us. Well, I mean, McTominay probably took the prize for that one yesterday. But yeah, very funny to see.
What we need, and I've said this for years, we don't, and to be fair as well, Almiron in St. Maximan, two lads that if you touch them, they're going to do 16 somersaults. It's infuriating as an opposition fan, but we've been too nice, and I've been saying it for 5 years in the podcast, we've been too nice. Almiron does need to stop diving in the age of VAR, admittedly. Like, I was all for it like last season, but he's going to get himself sent off. Because Almiron's got a bad tackle on him as well. Mm. We kind of want these players who are going to give the referee and the opposition a bit of a hard time. Not like against Leicester, we just folded and died. Yeah. I don't, just really quick and short, I still don't think he's capable of playing in the back four unless he was poor when he came in playing in the back four. And then when he had another two centre backs alongside him, he's been an absolute revelation. And we need to get him tied down on a new contract, because the contract he'll have signed on £3 million, whatever the fee was, he's worth 10 times that in the Premier League. Because he has proved in the Premier League he can hack it at this level. Not only can he hack it at this level, he's a goal threat.
I think he's spot on everything you said there. I think, just to echo that as well, I think even Clark and Lascelles, I mean, we just didn't give Manu anything. And there were a lot of little niggly tackles. I mean, you were talking about Rashford earlier. I mean, there was a moment there where he got his opportunity to have a run at Lascelles and nipped the ball down the wing. Lascelles, like, to his credit, caught up with him and put in a sliding tackle. And it was just anything they tried, they weren't getting. Matty James was getting pushed all over the shop by, like, Yedlin, put a couple of tackles in. Scher was, like, bullying him. Just putting them on the ground. And you're right, it was like we made it really difficult for them and basically made it to the point where they didn't really want to try and take anybody on to the point where they were going missing. I mean, the midfield, okay, I mean, Fred wasn't exactly looking to play any balls forward, but even if he'd have tried, they were hiding. I mean, there were times where Mata and Pereira in the first half, I was watching them, they had obviously quite a bit of possession, but they were doing nothing with it because these two players were literally just running to get marked by either Shaw or Clark. And it was just, it as you say, that five at the back works so well with these players because everybody knows the role and everybody's capable of doing the job. And they will make it at like a place where strikers don't want to come into because you know you'll get a kick or a little nudge or something and just put you off.
I think one of the most impressive things about Shaw and the way that I think he's just really stepped up. Like he's sort of got a lot more of authority within that team. Like he's leading by example. Well, he's being the defender to kind of to follow, to look up to.
I mean, at the end of the day, he's the international player in our team. That's a guarantee for his side, and they've played in big tournaments. So when you look at the sort of the CV of our players, I mean, he is the one that's sort of got the most decorated sort of his career so far, and I think that he should be really stepping up and leading by example. And as I say, hopefully a lot of the other players become shithouses, sort of learning from him.
But it's interesting, you know, the way that Shaw plays when he is sort of got a bit more of a sort of free rein to sort of bring the ball out. You know, we were talking before about the wing backs providing, you know, almost having dual roles, you know, that we've, you know, you see sort of other teams like sort of Sheffield United with their sort of overlapping centre-backs, all this kind of, you know, Shaw's been jumping the ball out for, you know, for the last sort of like couple of seasons. And, you know, if you've got players like Willems and Yedlin, granted they're wing-backs, they're supposed to do that. But, you know, you've almost got like, and Shaw getting forward, you've kind of got like, almost like three kind of defenders who become attacking threats. And it's like, before with the attacking third, we were so isolated. Suddenly we have, if we can find a system where we can find that support from the defenders from wide positions, that's going to have so much potential, and it's going to make opposition teams have to stop and think about exactly what threat, you know, we can provide them. We talked about Almiron a little bit. Let's just touch on, you know, he had another chance to throw on goal. It almost looked like he probably should have just taken a first-time chip. But it's almost like he was just trying to find a more sort of safe opportunity to shoot on goal. And it's like, you know, is this really becoming a problem now? Or do we just need to be patient and for him to find his place in a new system? How do you see it, Alex?
It's a worry. I'm sure he'll be worried about it. The incident you're talking about yesterday was brilliant. It was a brilliant ball by Sean Longstaff, a brilliant run, a brilliant first touch. All of those things there are lots of other players who play professional football that currently can't do. Like the pass, the vision, the run, the touch. The finish is probably the easy bit, and he's not getting that right at the minute. We need him to score 5-10 goals a season, minimum. You know, I've hopefully, you know, told everyone listening how buzzing I am about yesterday, but we've still only scored five goals in 8 games. That has to change. We are going to have to at least score a goal a game. Funnily enough, I looked at who scored the least amount of goals in the history of the Premier League and stayed up. Do you know who it was? You just won't get it. Silence isn't great for a podcast. So it was Leeds United in 96-97, scored 28 goals and finished 10th.
That's crazy.
28 goals?
That's filthy.
I mean, that was a different...
Well, the score... the goals... Part, yeah, your team's at the top now score, yeah. But the was teams that? In the bottom don't score any more goals than then.
How many teams were even in the league at that
the same,
point?
Same as now.
Still 20. It's gone down. I didn't know if it was like still like 22 or whatever. Like,
I could imagine that being a hard watch. We have to score goals, and we have to score goals quite quickly. And, you know, I've mentioned there the fixtures coming up. We've got games against Wolves, Bournemouth, West Ham, Villa. You know, that's all those teams keep picking up points and doing well. And Bournemouth have dropped a bit recently, so it's not going to be easy against them. But we are going to have to score goals. And Almiron is going to have to be a fundamental part of that, as is Saint-Maximin on the other side. You know, those two, we need a goal contribution from them. I'd say we need a minimum of 10 goals between them this season.
Do you think that he scores one, Almiron, and the floodgates will open, he'll sort of get his mojo? Because I was chatting with somebody in the stands next to me, and it was like, he said, do you remember that first game? I said, I think about that miss, that chip where he hits the post. I think about it all the time. Every time I see him on the ball, I'm just thinking, it was such a sliding doors moment. What would have happened had he dinked the keeper on his, you know, exactly. And then
run off into the sunset.
Exactly. Scoring an unbelievable goal. The confidence would have been sky. He would have felt invincible.
He'd have probably retired at that point. If he screwed.
As someone who has scored goals at St. James's Park, if Miguel would like
your
to
own
get
goal
in
net doesn't count.
I don't know. I think he's the kind of player, and this is a positive about him, he's the kind of player that even when we are playing very badly, he still seems to get chances. He also creates a lot of his own chances. So that's positive as well. So I think he will score. I think confidence will come. It's just, we need Miguel Almirón to kind of do everything he did yesterday, and that's be an outlet, be sensible in possession, not give the ball away, and also provide a goal threat. If he keeps on doing those three things, he's like crucial to this side. And if he keeps on doing those three things, goals will come. So,
well said. How did you view Joe Linton's performance yesterday? Obviously, he came off for Carroll fairly early, actually.
55 minutes.
Do you think that he can be part of a successful attack?
Can I just point out, yeah, he came off early because he had back injury from training the previous day, and there was a chance he wasn't going to start. So only because I watched it on TV.
I didn't know that.
Martin Tyler, so there's a chance Carroll was actually going to start. Bruce was like, yeah, we got half out of him. So
fair enough.
We thought, we were talking at the stands, like, that's really early. I mean, obviously the whole thing with Carroll's meant to be, is he going to be fit?
Yeah.
So we were a bit surprised by that. I mean, I thought he didn't have a bad game. I thought he was a good outlet again up front. He was bringing the ball down, sort of bringing it down his chest, giving us an opportunity to counter-attack. I think probably more successfully than Carroll did. I mean, I know, as a team, we probably had more chances as the game opened up when Carroll was on, because it was the end of the game and both teams were pushing for that win, and the game became a bit more open. But I think he was probably a bit more successful in terms of the link-up play with Sir Maximan and just retaining the ball when we went long to the midfield, and it gave us an option to push on. So I thought he had a good game. I mean, again, it's the same old, same old. It's all good and well in playing brilliant in the centre of the pitch, but we need him in the box. He didn't get any opportunities, I suppose. It's not his fault. He just didn't get... I think there was one cross, I think Yedlin dinged one at the back post, and he's just under it. It's just a bit too high, and he flicks it on. I think it goes to Jetro potentially at the back post too. I think we've got a corner out of it somewhere, but it wasn't even really a chance. It was like a half chance. A good cross there, he could have been in business. But yeah, it's that we need him getting in the box and sort of finishing. There was a couple of times where he'd played the ball off, and then it was just Maximan and Almirón running through, and you're thinking this isn't going to come to anything because there's nothing for them to sort of look for. So he's a good player. He's got technical ability. He's big, strong. He's got a bit of pace. I mean, I think what he might benefit from again is with the Longstaffs coming in, that there's that more opportunity of a forward pass to him. So he might, he'll get more chances of running in. I mean, we saw you talk about the Longstaff's ball to Almirón. We haven't seen that from Longstaff at any point this season. You can see he's grown in, and the fact that he's got a bit of space now and he's finding his form again, he's going to be looking for those opportunities. So I think, again, hopefully in games coming forward, we'll get more opportunities. But it's just, again, I think a little bit like Almirón, he'd benefit big time just from a goal and just to get that sort of feeling. I mean, it is difficult because we're not a team that we're creating loads of chances, and he's not playing 30% of the game or 20% of the game, whatever, in the opposition's half. A lot of it is a defensive role in terms of just making a nuisance of himself and trying to get on sort of 50-50 balls and whatnot. So it's a difficult job, and I get it. But I don't know. I think I've got faith in him. He looks like a good footballer, and I think, as I say, it's just one of those, he just needs the chances.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Maguire had the better of him yesterday. Obviously, you probably tend to, you know, expect that, given Maguire's own pedigree, even if he does miss a sitter at the other end. I just want to mention that again. But I think, you know, I didn't feel that Joe Linton won many headers yesterday, but actually looking at the stats, he won 8 out of 12 that he went for. But it got to the point where none of them were going anywhere. And actually, one of the key headers that he did actually win, everybody had stopped trying to gamble in behind him. Just because they didn't expect him to sort of get there or do anything. Carroll won a couple more when he came on. Carroll won all of his headers coming on. But here we've got like a couple of target men. I mean, yesterday we had three crosses in total. One of them was from Yedlin, which you mentioned, to Joe Linton, and the other two from each Longstaff. The Matty Longstaff one, which was, you know, brilliant little ball in for Carroll with that kind of diving header, which he did very well to make any kind of chance out of it. It was sort of a half chance. But you kind of think that if we are going to find ourselves more in the final third, and you'd like to think once we get over the, you know, some difficult fixtures against some very, you know, some good teams, but we are going to still have to pick up points, that we can maybe find ourselves in positions where we can get more crosses into the box and hurt teams that way, because we've got strikers to do that. We're not playing Dwight Gale up front. We're playing two big lads up front. We need to find them more and try to play to their strengths a bit more. If we've got the back sorted out, we've got a kind of a general platform of an idea, of a plan, of a strategy, and that's when you can then think about, right, how are we going to continue to hurt people? How can we improve our attacks? What do you think, Alex?
Absolutely spot on, and crucial point you make about crossing the ball. Like, for all of St. Maximin's ability, and same for Almiron, they are not natural crosses of a football. The best crosses it looks like we've got in the squad, I would say, would be Matt Ritchie, the two Longstaffs, probably...
Sure.
Probably, I was about to say Jonjo probably, if he ever gets a game, and share on all the journey, but you know, you're not going to get loads of crosses from your centre back. So, you know, Matt Ritchie will be important for Joe Linton when he comes in. And I feel really sorry for Joe Linton, because you sign for a huge transfer fee, you come to England in the Premier League, and you're basically being asked to play the kind of role Kelvin Davis played for Bolton.
Kelvin Davis, the keeper.
Yeah. So at the moment, but that's what we need. That's what we needed yesterday. And he gets on with it. I do worry a little bit about his body language sometimes, and I appreciate his frustrations. I mentioned it last week about, you know, when Sean Longstaff put a terrible ball in, he was lip red saying, "What the fuck was that?" Yesterday, I noticed on TV as well, he was kind of getting a bit frustrated. But it is frustrating when you're running literally miles to not receive the ball to feet.
He's been starved, and he has been for games and games and games. Someone, and like you say, he wants to show people what he's good at and what he can do. Mm-hmm. But he's very, very rarely in a position where he's got the ball at his feet and he can actually...
He just does not get the ball in the box.
Yeah, let's
get it in our box, defending corners, right, but not...
I mean, let's be honest, he's come to Newcastle United to further his career in the Premier League and move on to bigger and better things. He's not going to do that if he's not scoring. So that's probably obviously in the back of his mind. But I think, everything we've been saying here, it give him chances, he will score. He's got ability. I mean, you saw in the opening game against Arsenal that he showed some brilliant feet in the box and got that shot off that went straight down the keeper. But he's got ability there. If he gets the chance, it's just a case of finding him. And yeah, I think it's, as you say, I mean, we were laughing all game. I mean, so I was saying, literally just put it high to Carroll. Like, that's all we'd needed to do, was just go along. And yet every cross was either along the ground or like just didn't beat the first man or whatever. And yeah, I think, again, that'll come just players getting used to sort of what we need to do. And as I say, it really, Joe Linton as well, probably needs to make an effort to get into the box. I think he plays too much of the game outside, getting there.
With everyone fit, there is a bit of competition, which we've kind of said from the start of the season, and everyone hasn't been fit and might never be fit. But, you know, the fact that Muto didn't even get on the bench yesterday, when I would have probably called for his inclusion, would have been wrong, because we won the game and played really well. You know, the fact that Key, Fernandez don't get on the bench, I'm sure they aren't happy about that as senior pros. But you have to say that you got it right yesterday, the manager, with the cause. And you hope that when everyone is fit, and if they stay fit, and you'll always have injuries and players suspended. No Hayden yesterday, but would Hayden have got on the bench? Or would Hayden get on the bench next time? So that should drive up the general performance, and particularly among the strikers, the fact that Joe Linton, if you do get chances and you don't take them, well, Dwight Gale will have your place. And if he can't do it, Muto's going to be snapping at his heels, because he needs to play. And then you've got Andy Carroll.
Big Andy.
So that should help us, and there are options then. Again, credit Steve Bruce yesterday. It didn't work. It definitely didn't work in the last two games against Brighton and against Leicester. So he chucked in some other players that at his disposal. And yeah, in an ideal world, you wouldn't be doing that, say, eight games into Premier League season. But if you're in that position, and for whatever reason, that's what you've got to do, that's all you can do. He did that well. So that was quite bold from him. And that's maybe what it needs as the season progresses. Because I'll say it again, as happy as I am, when Bournemouth and Wolves come, and particularly teams at the bottom, we are going to, I mean, we've already failed to take a win from either Brighton or Watford. We are going to have to create a lot more chances whilst maintaining that game plan, which everyone seems to be comfortable with.
I mean, that we when we did the preview on, I think it was Thursday or Wednesday, I mean, we said really it's on Bruce to find his team. And I think there's been a lot of chopping and changing. He's tried things and they haven't worked. I suppose, to his credit, he's still searching and he might have come across it. And I made the comment earlier at the start of the podcast about him stumbling on it. But this is the first time he's come to this combination. It's worked. Let's hope he sticks with it and let's see where it can grow from here. But it's a good platform, I think. That 11, there's a lot of potential in there. There's a lot of different sort of facets of the game that looks really good. And you look at that team and it looks like there's something there, whereas you wouldn't have said that in some of the previous games. So we've got to build on this. And as you say, we've got some tough games coming up, but I don't want to see any humpings. I want to see we're challenging in games. Yes, we're probably going to lose some games, but that's not the end of the world. Like, as long as we stick to this sort of idea of how we're going to play and start to develop some partnerships and positions and have moments in games. I mean, that's the thing I don't want to keep going on about Rafa, but staying in games is massive. And okay, we had our opportunities in the first half yesterday. It didn't come off. Like, just stay in games and you'll come about it. And I think that was the disappointing thing with Leicester was we just rolled over and didn't really try to sort of impact the game at any stage. We did it really well yesterday. Let's kick on from there and keep doing that.
I agree. And, you know, with 8 games gone, we are 3 points behind Spurs, 1 point behind Man United.
Top 4, here we go.
Picking up results against our relegation rivals. That's
if Steve Bruce was to do the unthinkable and go to Stamford Bridge and get a result, a win, we'd only be 3 points off behind Chelsea as well.
I mean, there's goals in that Chelsea team as well, for and against, so that could be an exciting game.
Lads, I'm going to end it there. Thank you very much for your time, Ben and Alex. And if you like what you've heard and you want to have a try at our Patreon content, as Alex mentioned before, about $7 of your hard-earned dollars will go. We've got loads of exclusive behind-the-paywall content for you, even more reaction and podcasts from all the group. So thank you very much for listening. I've been your host, Adam, and we'll catch you next time. Cheers.